something separate or goes against the Dhamma. Everything tends to intermingle, get entangled, and one thing is the same as the other. And there was one part of the Dhamma which would give me great confusion for so many years in my early life as a monk, and that was the meaning of right effort. And it's such an important part of the practice. If one doesn't get that right, then a whole of the practice is, many days get wasted, and a great deal of frustration comes in one's meditation practice. To find out exactly what right effort is was very difficult for me. I asked other monks and they just gave me the answers from the suttas. And yeah, it sort of made sort of some sense, but not enough. And it's only after much trial and error that you realize just what right effort truly meant. And I say from trial and error because basically what the sutta says is right effort is whatever creates the stillness, the peace, the energy, the joy, the wisdom, the insight, whatever produces the beautiful qualities of the mind. And of course, very often you put forth lots and lots of effort in a worldly sense, and you just get frustrated, you get tight, the mind wouldn't be still, there'd be no joy, and you'd end up getting upset and angry at yourself and others. And you see that much of monastic life where you see anger is because people put too much effort into their practice. They become tight, they never find peace, they get frustrated, and they never get the joys of meditation. It's great having been a monk for such a long time and understanding what right effort is. So just even the last couple of days, you know, just starting the retreat off, it's just so wonderful to have all this time to practice right effort and just start blissing out right from the very beginning. That it's, sometimes I surprise myself just how easy it is just to get right into the meditation. And because I know one thing, which is right effort, exactly what to do. And as I've mentioned many times, that right effort is the effort to say no, the effort to renounce, the effort to stop, the effort to let go, the effort to resist the stream of craving, just the effort to do nothing, to let go, be still, be empty, be free. To disengage, not to sort of start doing things. The effort to let go, not the effort to attain, as Ajahn Chah would often say. And I mention that to you with in capital letters, in neon lights. This meditation retreat for 3 months is not to attain something, but to let go of things. Underline that in your mind. Because every time you're going to try and attain something in this retreat, you're asking for suffering, you're practicing wrong effort. And I'll tell you why. Remember, this part of this path is to realize non-self, to realize this thing which the Buddha called atta is a delusion, it's just a myth, it's a phantom. It's not real, it's something which one has concocted, which one believes in, and the lie that is oneself becomes what one assumes to be truth. It's just a wrong way of looking, a delusion. And much of what one takes to be effort, if not all, of what you believe and understand to be effort, is all coming from this atta, this me. This I who wants to attain, this I who wants to get something, this I who doesn't want to waste time, who wants to get some benefit from the next 3 months. And you'll find that what you're doing is no more than just collecting more achievements. Just like what you've been doing for your whole life, just collecting things, amassing things, either material or spiritual attainments. And that amassing of things, like awards, decorations, wealth, physical wealth or spiritual wealth. You know the spiritual wealth which we show off by telling each other how much we know about the Dhamma. In the same way that people show off their material wealth by living in big houses, having fancy cars and and designer clothes. They're just showing off their material wealth. The same way that we can show off our spiritual wealth by telling other people about the Dhamma. Remember, that's not your job. That's my job as a teacher. It's a job, that's all. So don't show off your spiritual wealth. You're just making a stronger sense of self. Maybe not a materialistic atta, but one even worse, a spiritual atta, which will stop you becoming enlightened for many lifetimes. So remember, we're not here to make this sense of self stronger, but to weaken it, to dismantle it, to allow it to sort of vanish. And one way of doing that is know that the cause of this delusion of self is very much our will. The more you will, the more you do, the more you create this delusion of a self. And you can see that happening. It's one of the reasons when you will and you fail, you suffer. What are you suffering for? What's wrong with failing? It's because it hurts one's sense of self. It hurts one's pride, which is an aspect of the self. It hurts one's idea of, you know, what one can do, what one can't do. Remember, all that suffering of failure just comes from a sense of self. And all come because one tried. One attempted. One put forth this effort to get something and one never got it. But even worse than failure is success. Because when you achieve something, very often that just makes the sense of self even stronger. Look at me, I passed my degree. Look at me, I've done so many retreats. Look at me, I know so much. I can recite the Patimokkha. I know Pali. I am a good meditator. I am this, I am that. Remember, all the successes in your life, be very careful, because that will just make, again, a stronger sense of self, of me and identity. And you'll find even in this retreat, for the next 3 months, you ask, what am I doing this for? Am I doing this to strengthen my identity? Or am I doing this to unravel it, to let go, to be a nobody, to disappear, to vanish? So there's no one in here. It's wonderful to see all the teachings of the Buddha which are in the suttas, and if you want to read anything during this rains retreat, that's to be recommended. Because every time you read a sutta, it's not for information, you know the information already. It's literally to reinforce that message. It's brainwashing, it's conditioning, it's this positive reinforcement of to the mind. That this is what the Buddha taught, this is the Dhamma, this has been accepted for 2500 years to be core teachings of the Dhamma. And if you keep filling your head with those core teachings, which you read from the suttas, that is going to change you, that has an effect on you. That is a practice which assists the meditation and your powerful insights which come as a result. It's just feeding the car with the best possible fuel. If you feed your car with rubbish fuel, of course it's going to break down. It's not going to be able to reach the end of the course. So by putting your beautiful teachings into your mind again and again and again, what it actually does, it reinforces, the Buddha said again and again, there is no one in here, there isn't a self. And the thing which originates the will, it's not me, it's not a self. So who the hell is doing all of this anyway? It's just delusion doing this. But once you learn and reduce the sense of identity, the sense of self, the sense of the controller, it makes it quite clear what this right effort truly is. It's to resist that delusion. It is to not to buy in to this concept of a me charging towards jhanas or or charging towards nirvana. It's one of the problems, especially with Westerners who have a very, very strong sense of self, who have been conditioned through their culture to understand that if you try hard enough then you will succeed. Most motivational psychologists will tell you that just you can do it, you can have it happen. Yes, that might work in the world. Usually it does not. The only people who succeed are the people who actually teach that sort of rubbish. But the actual process in spirituality, especially in meditation, goes in totally the opposite direction. Your job is not to try to succeed, it's to stop all this trying, to learn how to let go, to learn how to be still and peaceful. It's one of the reasons why that I made it clear that the meaning of samadhi is not concentration. Concentration is something you do, it's something which you can succeed at, something which you can generate through your effort. And of course, that just, to me, that's red bells all the way. Red lights and alarm bells all the way. They don't have red bells. You have red lights, alarm bells all the way. It's wrong. There's something very suspicious there. And many of you may have tried that for years and years and years and wonder why you get frustrated, why you don't get anywhere. And there's a good reason behind that. It's just making the sense of self more and more strong. It's not getting anywhere. But instead, by calling samadhi, the meditation stillness, such a beautiful word, because it carries with it a very strong implication that every effort, every will, every struggle will just make the mind less still. And instead, one has to have this beautiful sense of patience, of kanti, of just sitting there and doing nothing. And your mindfulness and your effort should be one of restraint. Should be one of just stopping things. Of when a thought arises in the mind, stop it, discard it. But even more than that, any sort of will, any plan, any controlling, anything which is going to move your mind, stop that, resist it, let it go. Your job is just to be as still as you possibly can, to do absolutely nothing. It's a tough thing to do, because that really means you have to sacrifice your sense of identity and self, the sense of being a controller, being someone who owns things and amasses things. You have to overcome that, which is why I'm starting this retreat with a talk on why it is that people can't meditate, why it is that they have frustration and trouble. It is because your sense of self is far too strong. And you try and do things, you try and make it happen, you try and get things. By making the first talk very clear, that is just going to cause you more and more and more suffering. You're not going to have a good time. You're not going to enjoy the peace and beauty and bliss of meditation. You're not going to see the Dhamma. So please take it on faith if you don't take it on wisdom. There isn't anybody in here. That which you take to be me is a concoction. It is a myth which the job of this path is to unravel. But just imagine there's no one there. So what on earth are you trying to do? What are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to get? Even trying to get happiness is a total myth. As that picture which I have on my shrine, in my office, of Ajahn Chah putting his hands up with that wonderful saying, joy at last to know there's no happiness in this world. Think of that. If you are searching for happiness, if you are striving for happiness, you are just striving for suffering, because the two always come together. There's no happiness without suffering. There's no suffering without happiness. The two go together. That's the play of samsara, sukha, dukkha, and in between. If that's what you're aiming for, you're just an idiot. You're just aiming for some more problems. Joy at last, to know there's no happiness in this world. So you stop striving for those things. If you think when you get jhana, then you're going to be happy. When you get enlightened, then you're going to be happy. You're striving for the wrong things. You will never get enlightenment. You'll never get the jhanas. Your imaginary jhanas, your imaginary enlightenment, that's all you're aiming for. The real things happen when you stop the striving. These are states of stillness. I was pointing out to somebody a few days ago that one of the great descriptions of nibbana is sabbasankhara samatha. It's a beautiful description. I encourage those of you with good brains to learn Pali, because there's some things in there which are just incredibly beautiful when you see them in the original. Sabbasankhara samatha, to calm and still all of this doing, all of these concoctions, all these fabrications, all these doings, to calm the whole of this doing process. When everything becomes calm and still, of course it disappears. The disappearance is called nirodha, cessation. And afterwards, it's gone, it's nibbana. It's a beautiful description. So you don't achieve things, you abandon things. You leave everything alone. This is a path of abandoning. As the Buddha said, sabbe nalang abhinivesanaya. There's nothing, absolutely nothing worth keeping. You let go of the whole lot, total, 100%. And that gives you the way of meditation. That gives you the way to nibbana. It becomes so simple. You sit there and you abandon everything. Unfortunately, it's very easy to abandon things on the outside. That's not what the Buddha meant. He meant abandoning the things on the inside. The things on the outside are just too many of them to abandon. You've got to abandon the inside thing, this thing which keeps picking things up, which wants things, which does things. It's a tough ask, because what you're really abandoning is your sense of self, this idea of me, this identity. Because who do you think you are anyway? That was one of my reflections which I used for quite a few years. What do I take myself to be? I didn't use a philosophical inquiry of just, you know, who am I? Because straight away I saw that who am I quest had an assumption that I was something. I just had to find out who I was. It was a wrong question. It assumed there was a self somewhere, but just find out what it was. What do I take myself to be? Opens the possibility that there's nobody in there. And every time I looked at that, what do I take myself to be? I could very easily just abandon those notions. You know, am I a man? Am I a monk? Am I an abba? Am I whatever? Am I my body? Am I my mind? Am I my will? Am I anything? Just you can abandon that so easily. Just reason tells you. When you ask the question, you get the answer and you see where you're stuck. Am I my meditation I just had this afternoon? Of course not, it's gone. So why should I delight in a beautiful meditation? It's nothing to do with me, that's not me. When I have a sleepy meditation, that's not me. What are you trying to attain? What can you keep? So what if you do get jhana this evening? It's not you. So what? Let it go, for goodness sake. And then you're pulling on the real path to jhanas and enlightenment. You're letting go of everything. And that's actually just what works. You sit there, and that's it. You don't do anything. You put your mindfulness up there. You don't even, actually there's, the right effort of stopping is so subtle, you don't even stop the stopping, which is more sort of effort. You actually become still. You relax, you let go. You allow the sense of self, which only manifests by doing things and attaching to things and grasping things and owning things. You allow this sense of identity just to vanish. There's no one in here, so what's there to do? There's nothing to gain. So why aspire for anything? You just sit there. Now don't think this is going to cause a lot of sloth and torpor and sleepiness and You think, well, why practice? Because all those other defilements, the hindrances, just now wanting to sort of, you know, have the cup of tea or the read the newspaper or just indulge in this or indulge in that, all those, you know, defilements, all those hindrances, that's not letting go. That's actually doing something. You're searching for pleasure, you're searching for fulfillment, you're searching for happiness. And after a while, you think, why read the newspaper? Why read the book? Why sort of, you know, go for the walk? Why do anything? What's the point? You know, you've done that so many times, it's just distraction. In the end, you just have to sit down and just do nothing. Do it properly. Learn how to do nothing. Learn how to just sit there. And of course, you've heard me say what happens. Because you're doing absolutely nothing, the mind becomes still pretty quickly. Yeah, it doesn't become still immediately. You've got the past karma, the agitations from what you've been doing before. That's why it does take me a couple of days, actually, probably less, for all that busyness which I do, to actually to stop and just let the mind settle down. And it settles down incredibly quickly. You just don't do anything. Sit there. And just watch this mind just rest, become still, and see the energy starting to come back. See it just watching the breath. You don't turn the mind to the breath. The breath is just there. You just watch it. It becomes this total natural process. And it's brilliant just to watch this. So, I know for years, and you used to do the meditation. I used to do breath meditation. Sometimes people ask you, what type of meditation do you do? Yeah, sometimes I'm stupid and say I do breath meditation, but that's a bit of a lie these days. It's a bit of a deceit. It's not really intentional, it's just habit, just saying things without thinking about it. What I do these days is absolutely nothing. I don't do breath meditation. Breath comes by itself. You just sit there totally still. Try it. See what happens. See if you can let go of the sense of self as a way of meditating. Imagine there's no one there. Understand there's nothing to achieve. Who's achieving it? It's just like having no place to hang the medals. I remember seeing the Catch-22 movie in a long time ago. And a part of that movie, there was, I forget who the hero was, but he won a medal and had to, you know, have the ceremony, but he decided to go to the ceremony with no clothes on, no uniform or nothing. So the major or the colonel or whatever couldn't pin the medal on him. He had no uniform to pin it onto. It's a crazy movie, but every now and again you see something in these movies and there's a meaning behind it. If you haven't got a uniform, there's nothing to pin the medal to. There's no sense of self, there's no identity, and that's what a uniform gives you, an identity. Where can the medal be hung? So when there's no sense of self, where can the achievements in meditation sort of stick to? Can't stick to anything. It's just anālaya, no sticking place, it's gone. So when one understands this, it means that one can meditate beautifully. One starts from the beginning, look, I'm not going to get anywhere, there's nowhere to get. I'm not going to attain anything. I'm not going to meditate and try and get into jhana. That's totally the wrong path. I'm not just going to get frustrated if I try that. I'm just going to sit here and be like a Buddha. No self, no wanting, no craving, letting go of everything. And you see these old habits come up, you let them go. An effort just to resist this controller. An effort to resist all types of craving and accumulating. So you're just like a person with no uniform on. No one can actually hang a medal on you. And because of that, people stop trying to hang medals on you. Because of that, there's nothing to do. When there's nothing to do, the mind becomes still. I don't know how many jobs you have to do in this monastery. I've got more jobs than anyone, in theory. When I go into my cave, though, I've got nothing to do, no jobs. I develop as an abbot irresponsibility. So I've become totally irresponsible when I come in my cave. Irresponsible means I've got no duties. The monastery just burns down, if all the monks just go back to Dharamsala with the nuns and just disrobe and get married. I don't care. I mean, it's irresponsible. This is meditation retreat, nothing to do with me. If the Buddhist society comes along and says, you stupid abbot, you should have stopped them, you should have done something. No one here. I'm not at home. I'm absent. There's no one inside. They're beautiful. Otherwise, when the heck do you think I could ever meditate? You've just got so many responsibilities. If I open my eyes and see all you people in front of me, my goodness, I'm supposed to be teaching each one of you. Not this evening. I'm just being still. Just enjoying myself. Being irresponsible. Not doing anything. And if I can do that, with all the responsibilities I'm supposed to have, why can't you? What responsibilities have you got? A lot of you, very, very, very little. So don't try and find more things to do. Find less things to do. Do your duties in this monastery which were allocated to you, and do no more. Don't go and write your journals. Don't go and write a book about your great wisdom. Just do absolutely nothing. See if you can actually sit in your rooms, which are built on purpose, so they're boring. Why are they boring? Because there's nothing to excite you, nothing to do. This place is built so you can be still, just like the forest. Nothing happening. So don't make things happen. All your fantasies, it's just putting off the job, putting off the time, when you just let everything go and become still. It's a beautiful opportunity, this rains retreat. In the Visuddhimagga it says, to try and find a monastery which is not being built, which is not old, which is in the middle age of monasteries, like this Bodhinyana monastery. The first years of this monastery we had to work so hard to create it. And maybe 20, 30 years time it would start falling apart, we'd have to work hard renovating it. But now we're in these golden years, a monastery which needs hardly any maintenance at all, which is comfortable and simple and incredibly well supported. We've got no worries. So it's a beautiful time to be still. Each one of you have made enough karma, including the lay people staying here. You've made enough karma to get here. You don't have to do anything more. Just sit down and enjoy the peace and the stillness. So during the next 3 months, please don't make plans. Please just don't write books. Please just don't waste the opportunity for stillness. We work so hard, we do so much, and the world is doing so much, and it just gets so complicated. Uncomplicate by being still, by being able to sit down, not going anywhere, not doing anything, not being anybody, just being still, nothing happening. And the thing is that if you follow that right effort, and all these things which you expected to get through your effort, the breath, the beautiful breath, the nimittas, the jhanas, incredible insights, the understandings of, you see in this text that the Buddha gave a discourse and Anyakondanya understood, became a stream winner. You can understand these things. All those great insights, even psychic powers, they will come in natural course because that's the nature when you're still. And sometimes when you're so still, it's incredible the energies which come up into your mind. Incredible energies. Sometimes many of you may have got nimittas and they've been so bright. Sometimes you feel you're going blind. I think someone said that to me recently. I think it was all places. It was over in Singapore. And they were just meditating. And they were a bit worried because the light was so strong. They thought they were going blind. And yeah, I've been there and done that. And just in case that you think it's going to create problems for your eyes until you realize, come on, stupid, you're not seeing this for your physical eye, it's your mental eye. The physical sense of seeing is gone. It's not going to blind you, you can take as much as you like, but you get incredible power. And when you understand that type of energy, you feel that energy as a result of stillness, you can understand where these powers come from. And you can make that sort of association there. Very great mental power. And these iddies will come along if you really want them. They're usually a bit of a distraction and a bit of unnecessary appurtenance, like these free gifts you get in sort of cornflakes boxes. I don't get cornflakes for the free gifts, I just want the cornflakes. Imagine that somebody, you know, you get your, porridge in the morning. Imagine there was a free gift in the oats and you made the porridge and you left a free gift in the porridge. And I was eating my porridge in the morning and just crunched on a sort of a toy, which was a free gift. They're just extra things, you don't really want them. No more than the extras, the free gifts of psychic powers. But what really is important is just the beautiful stillness which creates that power. And you feel that. So what happens when you follow that path of total letting go, because there's no one in here to do anything, you realize that, and that makes it so easy for you to do nothing. All these things happen by themselves. Present moment awareness. What else is there to do except be now? Now all this, why do you plan anyway? I'm going to go here, I'm going to do that. Just, you've been doing that all your life. You're here now. So don't do any plans till the end of the retreat. And as for the past, my goodness, just don't waste time on the past. You can't change it, it's gone, it's finished, it's ended, it's ridiculous. And think, I should have done this, I should have done that. Look, you've done it, it's finished, gone. And it's karma work out. You just have to do absolutely nothing with the past. That's straight from the Bhaddhekaratta Suttas. Just let go of the past and the future if you want to be still. And you can do that. And all the fantasies, I mean, where they lead you? How many times have you fantasized and just dreamed? And it's a waste of time, isn't it? Isn't it time now that you got down to the practice of meditating and actually do nothing, be still? When you learn how to let go, you learn that particular nuance of right effort, where you can sit here and not complain, not grasp, just be aware, but doing absolutely nothing, letting this moment be, not concerned where it's going to go, not worrying where it came from, just being in this moment. You feel stillness. You understand in your feelings intuitively that this is stillness. You stay there. Because stillness, this sounds a bit strange, stillness doesn't stay still. It grows, it develops. Stillness is a path. And the stillness gets deeper and deeper and deeper. The way it works is that when you are still, things vanish. It's the whole vanishing of samsara, which is what samadhi is all about, what meditation is all about. Letting things go means they disappear, they go. They're gone. They're not there anymore. That's why we call it letting go. And all these things, all this path of meditation is a gradual disappearance. And of course, that's why you need to have non-self. The self wants to keep things. The self won't let things go. The self won't even let your past go. That's why you can't stop thinking about the past. Because you think it's my past. It's a my past is the problem. It's a my future is the problem. When you take off that my, it's easier to let go of these things. You're just here. And when you really let things go, they just past, future, gone. Thinking, what's the point of thinking? After a while, just that all disappears. You're silent. Just wait, it happens by itself. Don't try and make it happen. One of the reasons why people do think is just the reverberations of the will. You will something and that just shakes your mind. It creates waves and you feel or you perceive those waves as thoughts. As you let things go, just the waves get less and less. The thoughts get less and less until you're still. It's so lovely to be still. It's like living in the quiet forest. Nothing is moving. There's always something I recognize as holy with stillness. I used to, when I was a layperson, I was up in Durham for a year. I remember just going in London. You'd always try and find a church, or even better, the old cathedrals. And I actually deliberately went into those cathedrals, not that I was a Christian, because they were silent places. I remember old Durham Cathedral, it's a beautiful place. You go in there and it was so quiet, and you could just sit there and just rest. Outside there was always people walking around doing things. It was a silence for me which was a holy part of those huge buildings. But I do remember, I think it was just before I went to Thailand to become a monk. I think busy just in London, tying up loose ends, and getting sort of stressed out and just going into Westminster Abbey. I've been there before, a nice quiet place. You didn't have to pay in queue to go in those days. It was tourists would go in there, but it wasn't that touristy. You go in there and I remember my heart dropped. I was just so disappointed because it wasn't quiet anymore. They'd installed a PA system and they had these advice and sermons all the time, through the PA system. And the quietness, the sanctity, the stillness had gone. I just turned around and went out and just decided I'd never go in there again. Please don't disturb stillness when you encounter it. So I get this beautiful stillness in the mind. And it just comes from just waiting. Not doing anything. The old karma, the old thoughts settle down. Some of you may have to wait a while, but it comes. If you're sitting down, don't worry, you can change your posture, move your legs around, sit on the chair, lean back, but just carry on meditating, carry on being still, carry on doing nothing. It might take a couple of hours, but it happens. And don't try and just force your body into an unnatural position. Because all the pain and discomfort, if you meditate with discomfort, that will just create more disturbance for you. You never become still when you've got an aching, throbbing pain. So be comfortable. And after a while the mind becomes really still. When it becomes really still, there's no past, no future, no thoughts. Breath is there just because there's nothing else the mind can watch. Nothing else moving. And it becomes just so delightful. Why it becomes delightful is because when you're still, energy starts to come back. And sometimes I work hard, I get really tired, I use tea and a bit of caffeine to give me a bit of a boost of energy. But when you're meditating, you just get this natural energy, the energy of stillness. And where it's coming from, you're not wasting energy, you're not exerting energy, that there's no loss of energy. And all the work which you do, going backwards and forwards, doing your tasks, even just brushing your teeth or going to the toilet, that takes energy. Imagine you've done all of that, everything is settled, you sit down, do absolutely nothing. You're conserving energy, nothing is being wasted. And there's a natural source of energy, it's always energy dripping in. Because you're not wasting it, it just builds up. You energize. And that energizes, I really get off on that meditation energy, because it really makes me happy. That's where I get my joy from. You can get so much joy from tea, but not that much. It's the meditation energy, that's what I really get off on. And that really inspires you. You're just sitting there and you get all this incredible joy coming up and energy. You know, you're high. And that's what's supposed to happen. It's just the high of stillness. It just builds and builds and builds. So the breath, yeah, it's delightful. Anything is delightful. Simply because you've been still long enough to let it happen. Now you're getting into meditation. Stillness is becoming power. The mind is beautiful. And the breath is beautiful. It's just so delightful. You just sit there and you just watch it for hours. Sometimes people say, oh, somebody went to this Vipassana retreat and the teacher there said that, you know, she could only watch the breath for maybe 1 or 2 seconds at most. There you are, you're watching the breath for hours. No effort. Easy. Actually, you don't watch it for hours because it usually disappears after half an hour, 20 minutes or even less, because then you get into the really juicy stuff. You get much better than the breath. You don't get restless. All restlessness comes from effort, from doing things. So when you really learn how to let go and be still, just the breath is really incredibly beautiful, and it gets even more beautiful until the beauty is all that's left. I know that some of you, it's a common question, they say they meditate, they can get the mind peaceful and still, but they don't get the beautiful nimittas, they don't get the piti sukha up. It's because you're not still enough yet. You haven't kept that stillness long enough. You're still doing too much. But it's the nature of the mind. It's not to do with you, your abilities or lack of abilities, no more than the law of gravity is anything to do with you. It's just the law of nature. The law of nature is when you're really still, you get energy, you get bliss. It's nature, nothing to do with you. Whether you're a good meditator or a bad meditator, that's just atta stuff, that's self stuff. Just when you let go and you're still, this is just what happens. You get into beautiful breath, and the breath just vanishes. You're just left with the joy, the bliss. Great nimittas come up. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful lights. Oh yeah. But the thing is that if you really rejoice, well, hey, I've got a nimitta, it's mine. When that atta comes up, you've lost it. It goes, it disappears. It's nothing to do with you. This is a sign of you disappearing. It's a sign of the will disappearing. It's a sign of stillness. These are all stages of letting go, stages of stillness. If you make stillness, letting go, abandoning, this is just what happens. If you look upon these things as attainments, they never come. If you look at this is when what happens when you give up all attainments, and then you're on the path. There's that saying which I mentioned at the beginning of Rage Retreat 2 or 3 years ago, the great saying from Visuddhimagga again, the path is but no traveller on it is seen. No traveller, if you're doing the path, there is no path. If you're doing the practice, there is no practice. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Don't be the traveller. Don't be the person doing the practice. Vanish, disappear, be still. And all these things happen. And you get this beautiful, beautiful nimittas. You get this beautiful, beautiful jhanas. It just happens as a natural course. The stillness gives you the piti sukha. And if you're meditating and you haven't got the joy of the piti sukha in your meditation, you're pretty still, but there's no oomph to it. No incredible lights, no blinding nimittas, no incredible bliss coming up. It means you're not still enough. You haven't stayed still enough. You've tried. That's a failure. And so when you get into these jhanas and you really, really bliss out, you're so absolutely still. Sometimes people might see you and they think you're dead. Remember once, I can't say that, it's personal experience. Just sometimes people see people in deep meditation and they think they're dead. Remember this monk in Thailand years ago got into deep meditation, and the lay people afterwards, they said, we thought he was dead. Sitting up there for hours. That's what it looks like, absolutely still, nothing moving. So what does it mean by being dead? That you're gone, you disappeared. That's why the experience of anatta and the deep meditations of jhanas, they're just two aspects of one thing, of dhamma. The jhanas are not apart from anatta. Anatta is not apart from the jhanas. A lot of the self is gone. If you haven't understood anatta, you can't get the jhanas. At least a lot of anatta. Not total, but heaps of it. Because of course the part you have not really penetrated yet, the fact that even the mind has nothing to do with the self, there's no one, the mind isn't sort of permanent, it's just a phantom as well. So you just get these beautiful, beautiful, deep wisdoms. And the less you are, it's also like a reinforcing snowball thing. That the more you get into jhanas, the more you see there's no one in here, the more you see there's no one in here, the easier it is to get into the jhanas. You get more jhanas, less sense of self. It just builds and builds. Deeper jhanas, more of you disappears. More stillness, more emptiness, more freedom. And you realize why the Buddha taught anatta. And as someone reminded me, one of their favorite suttas, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, probably my favorite sutta as well, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Dhammacakka is right up there. But Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, which we're going to chant next week. It's so clear. The Buddha said, look, there's only five khandhas here, nothing else. None of these five khandhas belong to you. So there's nothing, absolutely nothing in the whole of samsara which belongs to you. You're ownerless. You don't own anything, and there's no owner in here. So what's the problem? What are you trying to do and achieve? What's missing? There's no one in here. You don't own anything. Just five khandhas doing their thing. So the next time you meditate, you just sit there and let the five khandhas do their thing. Nothing to do with you. If you can do that, all the jhanas, all the great insights, they will just happen. But as soon as you put in the slightest little bit of me, I'm doing this, I'm getting this, the tiniest bit of self, it doesn't work. You won't be able to just to sit there. You'll do something. You'll make it happen. You'll expect something to happen. Why do you have expectations? Expectations because you want to achieve something, you want to get somewhere. And after all these years of practicing, you want to sort of go along and say to someone, yeah, at last I've got jhana. Come on, that's the sense of self, another attainment, another medal you're putting on your chest. You're making more uniforms for yourself. That's where you get expectations from. When you don't want anything, why do you want to expect anything? When you don't need anything, where's the anticipation? No anticipation, no expectation. You don't want anything. When you don't want anything, you can enjoy what you already have, which is nothing. So enjoy this moment, just being here, doing nothing, absolutely still, no self. And to me, just the whole teaching of non-self, especially in Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, is teaching you how to let go and be still. If any of these khandhas were really yours, you could tell them what to do. You could do something then, because it's your business to do it. But because none of these khandhas belong to you, and nothing to do with you, it becomes absolutely futile to say, oh, may my mind be like this, oh, may my mind be like that. So you can't do that. So Buddha actually said that very clearly. Oh, may my mind become still. Oh, may my mind get jhana. Oh, may my mind become enlightened. Oh, may my mind get psychic powers. You cannot do that. You've been trying for not just years, for lifetimes, trying to say, oh, may my mind become still. You can't do that. That's a mistake. Because these things don't belong to you. So you just leave them alone. And then they're still. That's the way of meditating. Stillness. Letting go. Stop interfering. Stop engaging. just disengage. And that takes this beautiful effort to do nothing. The effort to disappear. The effort just to take your fingers out of the pie, to take your hands off steering wheels, feet off pedals, whatever simile you can think of, just to be able to sit there and be absolutely still. That is the technique. That is meditation. And people say, well, what type of meditation should I do? Anapanasati, kasinas, metta meditation. That doesn't matter at all. It's not what object you have, it's how you meditate. The object is totally irrelevant. The attitude is crucial. If the attitude is trying to get something, it's a waste of time. You're just going to get frustrated. Yeah, you can get so far, but you just can't. It's just a waste of time, basically. You're just going down dead-end streets. But if you have the right attitude, you know about what we mean by letting go, what we mean by putting things down, what we mean by renouncing. We know that because when there's a degree of stillness, that's what you've just done. You learn from your experience. When I'm still, why did I become still? Where did that arise from? And you find there's been a lot of letting go, a lot of renouncing. And the more you become still, the more you learn how to renounce. And as you renounce a whole lot, then you get really still. And then you understand, oh, that's what meditation is. Whether you're watching the breath or whatever, it doesn't really matter. These are all part of a natural flow, a natural course. And the amazing thing is that everybody goes the same path. It's just the nature, this is what happens when you let go. Past and future disappears, the verbal part of the mind disappears, the inner speech. Usually you watch the breath, sometimes you can go past the breath very quickly, you go still so quickly that even the breath just doesn't come to you, just goes straight into the mind. Beautiful nimittas, joyful, blissful power. Piti sukha is an important part that you can't get past. You can't sort of find a way around it. That's an important part. If you haven't got that piti sukha, that joy, the bliss of meditation, you still need to do a lot more stillness. When that really comes up, that's a good sign that you're getting somewhere. That's why I've said before that I can tell people's meditation, not what you tell me. You can tell me you're just in great nimittas, you tell me you've just been in third jhana. That doesn't cut any ice with me. Just I look at just how much bliss you've got. You can't hide, you can't manufacture that. If you're really blissed out, and that's all written all over your face, all over your body language, yeah, you're getting into some nice meditation. What a wonderful way to spend a retreat, just blissing out, bliss upon bliss upon bliss. Deep, deep meditations. Learning about what happens when you realize anatta. And just blissing out all the way to Nibbana. And don't ever think you get attached to this bliss. These are parts of letting go. The Buddha said again and again and again and again, don't be afraid of that bliss. It happens. It's important. It's just the natural course of things. When you're still and you build up that stillness, peace upon peace upon peace, stillness upon stillness. Just let stillness do its job. You don't have to do anything. The more you do, the more you waste time. Until you get so absolutely still, everything vanishes. Don't worry about fear. I always said in many talks, fear is a good sign. It's a sign you're letting things go. Just let them go. It's not worth hanging on to things. Be courageous. Do you really want to be enlightened? Do you want to get somewhere? And I shouldn't say get somewhere. I'm just using just the stupidity of the mind to encourage you. I should be a bit more pure. Just look, what's the point unless you really get some jhanas and enlightenment? This is the way. So stop messing around. Sit there and let it happen. So stillness, non-self, same thing. As the Buddha said, when is the self? There's something belonging to a self. And when is it belonging to a self? You've got business to do. You can't be still. When there's nothing in there, you own nothing, you've got no business at all. That's why you can be still. You own nothing, you've got nothing to lose, so let it all go. So that's the first talk for this range of treat.
Sūpaṭipaṭo bhagavato.